Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Wednesday, October 11th. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, City Staff Pitch Another Downtown TIRZ. Midland Tax Increment Reinvestment Zone could mean tens of millions of dollars for downtown improvements. By Stuart Doreen, staff writer. City staff has approached city leaders to start another tax increment reinvestment zone downtown. The zone is called a TIRZ, and its creation could land a net benefit of tens of millions of dollars over 30 years, according to a presentation made Tuesday prior to the main Midland City Council meeting. A TIRZ is the real property that is taxed to fund tax increment finance projects. The zone will be created initially for the city tax increments, although other entities will be asked to participate. The tax increment is the amount of ad valorem tax assessed or collected on the captured appraised value of property within the zone. This increment is above the base, which would be determined on already established property in the downtown TIRZ area or on new development. In both cases, current and future hotel developments in downtown Midland make this an advantageous time to recreate a TIRZ downtown. A TIRZ includes project plans and finance plans, both of which are presented to a TIRZ board and respective government boards. There is no new tax created, just a movement of tax already being collected. Information from the city, presented to Midland City Council, shows city TIRZ revenue could increase to $500,733 annually by 2028 and to more than $1 million by year 10. That money, over the life of the TIRZ, again estimated at $53 million, could be used for utilities improvements, parking and transit improvements, street and intersection improvements, pedestrian enhancements, open space, park, public facilities, administrative costs, and economic development grants. The model showed to the council showed more than $13 million used for economic development grants. Proposed next steps, according to the city, include a first reading and public hearing on October 24th, and the second reading and City Council consideration of the ordinance on November 14th. Creation of the ordinance includes setting the boundaries, the term, the board, city participation, and preliminary project and financing plans. Upon TIRZ creation, the final project and financing plan is approved by the TIRZ board and then the City Council by separate ordinance at a later date, the city reported. The city also reported Tuesday there is $400,000 left from a TIRZ created in 2001 and terminated in 2014. City staff showed the council projects that the money could be used for including alley revitalization, specifically alleys adjacent to the DoubleTree by Hilton, Midland Plaza, and Basin PBS. Lighting projects, tree, signs, and string lighting at Colorado Street and Wall Street, Wall Street and Main Street, and Wall Street. Streetscape enhancements, cyclist, pedestrian improvements, landscape improvements, parklets, public art, and street furniture. Parking, on-street, better uses of public garages, incorporate up to 1,800 privately owned surface lots like those by the downtown library, and improving parking lighting and signage. Wayfinding signs, creating paths to landmarks, identify paths to downtown parking, and identify various districts. This article is entitled $1 Million Bonds Set for Murder Suspects by Mercedes Cordero, staff writer. Two Midland men charged in the murder of 25-year-old Raul Ortega are being held in Midland County Jail on $1 million bonds, respectively, according to court documents. Carlos Diaz Jr., 22, and Angel Alvarado, 19, are being charged with first-degree murder. According to court documents, a detective with the Midland Police Department arrived at about 1:40 a.m. at the Stripes convenience store located at 4508 North Big Spring Street in reference to a deceased male. The officer observed that Ortega appeared to be a victim of repeated blunt force trauma to the face, head, and abdomen, according to the arrest affidavit. The detective learned that Ortega was visiting a Stripes employee when a gray Ford Ranger pulled up to the convenience store at about 1:11 a.m. The employee stated that a Hispanic male entered the store, walked to the beer cooler, and took a box of beer without paying for it. She also stated that the same male had also previously stolen beer from the convenience store on October 6th when she was working, according to the arrest affidavit. She stated Ortega took a photo of the Ford Ranger and sent it to her before walking to the rear of the store near the dumpster. At about 1:13 a.m., a frequent customer told the employee that there was a person lying on the ground outside and that she needed to call 911. Detectives found video footage from the store that showed multiple males beating Ortega to death and then leaving the scene in a Ford truck and in Ortega's vehicle, according to the arrest affidavit. The detective believed that one of the participants in this murder took possession of Ortega's truck. The Stripes employee was interviewed at the Midland Police Department at about 2:41 a.m., when she explained she didn't know the individual who stole from the store, but believed he associated with a group of males that hung out at the home belonging to Diaz, according to the arrest affidavit. At about 3:20 a.m., MPD officers located a gray Ford Ranger that matched the pickup Ortega photographed at Diaz's house. That same truck was observed on traffic cameras traveling through the Wadley Avenue and La Mesa Road intersection shortly after the crime occurred, according to the arrest affidavit. The detective obtained a search warrant for Diaz's house and found two males, identified as Diaz and Alvarado, were the only occupants. The detective located a pair of shoes that matched the bloody shoe print's tread pattern, soaking in a bucket inside of a bathtub, as if someone was trying to clean and sanitize them, according to the arrest affidavit. Clothing with what appeared to be bloodstains were also located in the home. Alvarado was recognized as the beer theft suspect on the store's video footage, according to the arrest affidavit. If convicted of the first-degree felony charges, Diaz and Alvarado could face up to life imprisonment. This article is entitled Biden Vows $7 Billion for Hydrogen Hubs by Ari Natter, Bloomberg. President Joe Biden is set this week to announce as much as $7 billion in funding for hydrogen projects across the country as part of a competition to jumpstart production of the clean-burning fuel in the U.S., according to people familiar with the matter. The funding for so-called hydrogen hubs, where gas can both be produced and used, is intended to highlight its potential as carbon-free fuel to run factories and power plants. the amount of hydrogen produced in the U.S. could surge to 10 million metric tons by 2030, according to a report released earlier this year by the Energy Department. Biden is scheduled on Friday to visit Pennsylvania, which is leading an Appalachian hydrogen hub that proposes to use natural gas and carbon capture, where he will give remarks on clean energy transition, according to the White House. The project, in partnership with West Virginia and Ohio, also includes Shell PLC. The awards mark the culmination of a furious race between states for the funding, which was included in 2021's bipartisan infrastructure legislation. The Energy Department in January urged 33 projects to submit full applications after receiving 79 proposals. Between 6 and 10 are expected to receive final awards. Representatives of the White House and the Energy Department didn't immediately comment. One of the people, who was granted anonymity to discuss non-public deliberations, cautioned Biden's agenda could shift amid the administration's evolving response to Hamas's attack on Israel. Other top contenders for Energy Department funding include a Rochester, New York project led by a coalition of 7 Northeast states in conjunction with Plug Power, Inc., as well as a California-based public-private partnership that includes retailer Amazon.com, Inc., and industrial gas company Air Products and Chemicals, Inc. A West Virginia hydrogen hub, backed by Senator Joe Manchin, that is partnering with natural gas producer EQT Corporation, is also under consideration. The Biden administration has said the gas is needed to achieve its climate goals and has launched an effort to reduce costs, one of the biggest barriers to its widespread use, by 80% to $1 a kilogram by 2030. Clean hydrogen faces a range of first-of-its-kind challenges, including cost and business models, said Alex Kaiser, a senior vice president at the Energy Futures Initiative, a Washington nonprofit. The hubs can act as engines for kickstarting how these types of challenges can be sorted through. Not everyone is a fan. Opponents argue that while hydrogen is a clean-burning source of power, it takes a great deal of energy to produce. And when it's made with electricity from coal or natural gas, it has a bigger carbon footprint. We don't want to see billions of our tax dollars spent increasing emissions and environmental harm, said Lucas Ross, a senior program manager with the environmental group Friends of the Earth. The Department of Energy has considerable power over how this money is implemented. It's in their hands whether the hydrogen hub program becomes a lifeline for big oil. This article is entitled "Bonham Principle Leaves Midland for Fort Worth ISD" by Stuart Doreen, staff writer. Armando Gallegos is no longer the principal at Bonham Elementary. Instead, he has joined the former Midland ISD crew at Fort Worth ISD. Gallegos became the principal in July 2022 after the previous principal, Tricia Terran, was promoted to a position with the Learning, Leading, and Innovation team. Terran is now the executive director of school leadership. The Bonham principal received an opportunity to advance their career in another district, the district reported on Tuesday. A job notice for the Bonham principal position was posted on Midland ISD's website on September 28th. Midland ISD's compensation manual states an elementary school principal makes between $93,297 and $128,838. Gallegos is the new principal at O.D. Wyatt High School in Fort Worth, according to a message on X, formerly Twitter. Former Midland ISD Superintendent Angelica Ramsey, now the superintendent at Fort Worth ISD, has hired at least 10 former Midland ISD officials. This article is entitled, Exxon in Talks to Pay More Than $250 a Share for Pioneer, by Leanna Baker and Keel Porter and Kevin Crowley, Bloomberg. ExxonMobil Corporation is in talks to pay more than $250 a share for Pioneer Natural Resources Company, according to a person familiar with the matter. An all-stock deal could be announced as soon as Wednesday, said people familiar with the matter, who asked not to be identified because it isn't public. At more than $250 a share, the deal would value Pioneer at least $58 billion, based on its outstanding share count, according to data compiled by Bloomberg. A final agreement hasn't been reached, and the terms could change, or talks could still end without a deal, the people said. Representatives for Exxon and Pioneer declined to comment. Pioneer rose 0.8% to close at $237.41 in New York trading Tuesday, giving the company a market value of about $55 billion. Exxon fell 0.4% to $110.45 for a market value of about $442 billion. The deal would unite two of the biggest acreage holders in the Permian Basin of Texas and New Mexico, making Exxon far and away the formation's biggest oil producer. This article was written with assistance from Gillian Tan and Mitchell Furman. This is the Business and Oil page. This column is called Opinion. It is entitled, Exxon Looks to Future-Proof Its Business with Pioneer Bet, by Javier Blas, Bloomberg. When the International Energy Agency released its landmark net zero emissions roadmap in 2021, it made no mention of shale oil, as it signaled the demise of the drilling industry as we had come to know it. In an updated version last month, it hedged. The IEA said that, quote, no new conventional long lead time, unquote, projects were needed, but, quote, some, unquote, shale drilling would be required, quote, to avoid a sudden near-term drop in supply, unquote. Unsurprisingly, that's where ExxonMobil Corporation is looking to expand, in a move that is all about future-proofing its business. For several months, the American oil giant has been in talks to buy U.S. shale giant Pioneer Natural Resources Company, a deal with a reported price tag of as much as $60 billion. Now looks closer than ever. For more than a century, Exxon's business was straightforward. Fossil fuel demand rose every year, and executives knew it would continue doing so for as long as they could predict. Prices moved up and down in long commodity cycles. All that big oil needed was the geological acumen to find the next reservoir, and the political skills to sign a contract with a government in a far-flung corner of the world. Its cash and prowess to build marvels of engineering mega-projects would do the rest for the next 50 years or so. Those were the good old days of Lee Raymond and Lucio Noto, the two executives who created the modern ExxonMobil via a merger in 1998. Back then, the deal they crafted was about cutting costs. Thousands of jobs went at the start, so those projects could make money even when oil prices were low. The industrial logic was simple: add size and reduce costs. Darren Woods, the current Exxon boss, doesn't enjoy the same predictable landscape. While the transaction he's pulling together is as consequential as the one his predecessors inked a quarter of a century ago, it reflects a different kind of industrial logic. This time, it's about flexibility to deal with the uncertainty of fossil fuel demand, as government policies seek to discourage its use. And oil prices are far more volatile. Over the last 5 years, West Texas Intermediate crude has traded as high as $130 a barrel and as low as minus $40 a barrel. If Exxon is going to thrive, it needs a portfolio adapted to that new landscape. Where in the past certainty was key, today it's agility. In industry speak, that's short-cycle oil as opposed to long-lead oil. Projects that can be brought on stream quickly and cheaply, with costs measured in millions of dollars rather than billions, and lead times of weeks rather than decades. Luckily for Exxon, that short-cycle oil exists in its own backyard. The Permian Basin region, straddling West Texas and southeast New Mexico, is the world's most flexible source of new production. Exxon made its first big shale acquisition in 2009, buying XTO Energy Inc. for $31 billion in a bet on natural gas. The deal, the brainchild of Woods' mentor Rex Tillerson, was ill-timed, coming at the peak of the gas price cycle. Exxon, already under Woods, got it right a few years later in its second attempt in shale, buying the oil business of the Bass family of Texas for $6.6 billion. The XTO Bass deals gave Exxon some of the flexibility that shale allows. Still, the mega projects of yesteryear dominated. But acquiring Pioneer would supersize that flexibility. Back-of-the-envelope math suggests that after a deal with Pioneer, Exxon would pump nearly 1.2 million barrels a day in the U.S., or about half of its global oil output. It's not the size that matters most, though. It's the ability to adjust production and investment quickly. Typically, the way big oil manages throughout the cycle is by keeping costs down and taking on debt when prices fall and accumulating cash when prices recover. That's because conventional long lead projects can't be stopped if oil prices fall. They're the industry equivalent of Catholic marriage vows, for better, for worse, for richer, for poorer, in sickness and in health, until death do us part. Shale oil is instead more progressive. It allows divorce. For a business planner, that has three advantages. First, it can fine-tune output to prices. Second, it can allow a retreat if demand starts to fall. And third, it permits cutting investment during a downturn, making it easier to pay shareholders richly even when prices falter. And, as ExxonMobil, like the rest of us, doesn't know what the future holds, a permanent commitment is hard. Love with an option sounds like a better deal. This article is entitled "Hotel Planning to Begin Next Week" by Ben Schaffer, staff writer. The Midland City Council voted 7-0 Tuesday to grant a 10-year hotel occupancy and property tax abatement to the developers of the Tapestry Hotel, a 34,000-square-foot boutique hotel coming to 112 South Lorain Street. The agenda item was part of the city's consent agenda and required no discussion prior to the vote. Following the vote, Escamilla Media President Al Escamilla said the Tapestry developers will begin planning the next steps toward development next week. A more detailed timeline will be shared when it's created. I feel very grateful for the council voting 7-0 to invest in our community, as Camilla said. The Tapestry Hotel is a perfect fit for downtown, with its boutique style and hyper-local focus. Tapestry Hotels call themselves hyper-local because of its regionally inspired interior design and incorporation of local businesses within the hotel. Tapestry Hotel by Hilton would eventually bring more than 10 times the amount of property taxes to Midland, ranging from approximately $200,000 to $300,000 in taxes to Midland ISD every year, to approximately $20,000 to $30,000 to the Midland Hospital District, according to a fact sheet provided earlier this year. This article is entitled Last Chance to Attend Saturday's Fur Ball by Morgan Taylor Thomas, staff writer. The Midland Humane Coalition will host the 12th annual Fur Ball this weekend. The gala-esque event serves as the Humane Coalition's biggest fundraiser and has been recurring since 2010. Funds go toward pet rescue operations and other animal necessities and the nonprofit's two facilities, the Enhanced Adoption Center inside the Midland PetSmart and the Joe and Van Maybe Animal Rescue Center, the Maybe ARC. Each year, more than 200 people enjoy the glam of the Fur Ball. This year, the theme is 101 Dalmatians in honor of Dalmatians. Guests should wear black and white evening attire, formal, semi-formal, and business casual welcome. As always, guests will be able to play games such as poker for a chance to win prizes. A live and silent auction will also be running along with rock tunes from West Texas Funk. An open bar will provide the sips, while food will be catered in. There will also be a dance floor and plenty of other activities to keep people entertained throughout the night. The event will be held at the Midland Country Club from 6 to 10 p.m. on Saturday. This year's tax-deductible ticket runs at $150 for general admission. They can be purchased at midlandhumane.org. VIP tables and sponsorships are still available. This article is entitled, Longtime Manager Becomes Becky's Flowers' New Owner, by Morgan Taylor Thomas, staff writer. Midland floral shop Becky's Flowers is now under new ownership and management. Jennifer Soto, who was the shop's manager for the past few years, bought the shop from previous owner Jenny McCombs. Beyond her talents in floral design, Soto is an active member in Young and the Breastless, a support group for breast cancer survivors and fighters. She will also be this year's guest speaker at the annual Pink in the Park event Saturday downtown in Centennial Park. According to a Facebook announcement from McCombs, Soto will be the shop's third owner. McCombs bought the flower shop 8.5 years ago from creator Becky Weaver. Becky ran the business for more than 30 years. Soto has big plans for the shop, all while continuing the floral legacy that has been established in the tall city. Becky's Flowers is located at 2603 Midland Drive and is open from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday and 9 a.m. to noon Saturday. Based on Facebook updates from McCombs, she moved to Fredericksburg to take over Full Moon Inn Bed and Breakfast. This article is entitled, Midland Authorities Searching for Stripes Robbery Suspect, by Mercedes Cordero. Midland Crime Stoppers is offering a cash reward for any information that leads to the arrest of this week's Crime of the Week robbery suspect. On August 10th, at about midnight, an armed male entered the Stripes at 2106 West Front Street and pointed the gun at the clerk, and walked behind the counter toward the cash register, demanding the clerk to open the register. The suspect took the money from the register and grabbed several cigarette cartons. He was last seen running west from the store. If a person has information about the case, call the hotline. Go to 694tips.com or use the mobile app P3 Tips. A person could earn a $1,000 cash reward if the tip leads to the suspect's arrest. No caller ID is used, and callers will remain anonymous. Reference the Midland Police Department's case 230-810-002. This article is entitled Midland Odessa Trunk or Treat Halloween Events by Ben Schaffer, staff writer. Local Trunk or Treat Locations. October 14th, Trunk or Treat and Fall Festival, Bush Tennis Center, 7 a.m. to 9 p.m., 5700 Briarwood Avenue. October 20th, Trunk or Treat with Midland Police Department, 6 p.m. Hogan Park. October 20th, Trunk or Treat, Harmony Science Academy, 6 to 8 p.m., 2755 North Grandview Avenue, Odessa. October 24th, Trunk or Treat, Midland Medical Lodge, 4 to 5:30 p.m., 3000 Mockingbird Lane. October 25th, Trunk or Treat, Episcopal Church of the Holy Trinity, 5:30 to 7 p.m., 1501 Ohio Street. October 26th, Halloween Fest, 6 to 8 p.m., MLK Park, 1415 Scarborough Drive. October 27th, Trunk or Treat, F-45 Training, North Midland, 5:30 p.m. at 4425 West Wadley Avenue, Suite 110. October 27th, 28th, Trunk or Treat, KW Midland, 11 p.m. to 1 a.m., 4920 North Midkiff Road. October 28th, Trunk or Treat, Coulon Dental, 4 to 7 p.m., 4505 Holiday Hill Road, number 200. October 28th, Trunk or Treat, Latin Edge CC, 3 to 7 p.m., 4509 Navarro Drive. October 28th, Trunk or Treat, Mission Square, 2 to 4 p.m., 4400 North Big Spring Street. October 28th, Trunk or Treat, Legacy Harley-Davidson, 10:30 a.m. to 2 p.m., 12100 West Highway 80 East. October 29th, Trunk or Treat, First Christian Church, 4 to 6 p.m., 1301 West Louisiana Avenue. October 29th, Midland Bible Church Country Fair, 4 to 7 p.m., 5900 Whitman Drive. October 31st, Trunk or Treat, Fannin Terrace Baptist Church, 6 to 8 p.m., 2800 Mogford Street. Anyone with additions or corrections can send them to ben.schaffer@hearstnp.com. This article is entitled, OPEC's Spare Oil Buffer Can Help Weather Storm, by Grant Smith, Bloomberg. Global oil markets may be facing heightened risk from tumult in the Middle East, but they're better equipped to weather the shock than during previous crises. Having slashed crude output this year to prop up prices, Saudi Arabia and its OPEC Plus allies are left with a healthy reserve of spare production capacity. Outside of the COVID pandemic, when lockdowns caused demand to slump, it's the biggest buffer in more than a decade. OPEC, primarily Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates, we'll be sitting on more than 4 million barrels a day of idle capacity this year and next. About 4% of global supplies, according to the U.S. Energy Information Administration. That's almost double the cushion they held during other regional crises, such as when the kingdom's Abqaiq processing facility was bombarded by Iran in 2019, or when Islamic State fighters captured huge swaths of Iraq in 2014. It's almost 20% more than when Libyan output collapsed during the uprising against Muhammad al-Qaddafi in 2011. After initially surging more than 5% in the wake of Hamas's weekend attack on Israel, crude prices have since subsided back below $88 a barrel in London. That's largely due to the lack of immediate threat to oil supplies, but it may also reflect the reassuring impact of OPEC's spare oil. Whether the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries and its partners could ultimately dip into that trove isn't clear. Riyadh has chosen to squeeze supplies so far this year, pushing prices to almost $100 a barrel last month. This article is entitled "School Choice Proposal Advances on Party Line Vote" by Talia Richmond and Robert T. Garrett, Dallas Morning News. Austin. A proposal to give students education savings accounts, which could be used to pay for private school, advanced on a party line vote from a Texas State Senate panel on Tuesday. Senate Education Committee members voted 10-3 for the special session's priority bill after hours of testimony from parents, advocates, and teachers. The bill, which now goes to the full Senate, would give parents $8,000 to use on a child's private school tuition or other education-related expenses such as uniforms or textbooks. Conroe Republican Senator Brandon Creighton, chair of the Senate Education Committee, outlined to other committee members his proposal, which is similar to one he rolled out in the regular session. However, many public school advocates oppose any voucher, like effort, noting that private schools don't have to accept every student, including those with disabilities, and aren't held to the same accountability or transparency standards. Meanwhile, the cost of private education is often more expensive than $8,000. Creighton said his plan would draw $500 million from general revenue without tapping foundation school program dollars that are for public campuses. Funds would be administered by the state controller's office, which would also be responsible for auditing the program and preventing fraud. Most Texas children would be eligible for an Education Savings Account, or ESA, under Creighton's plan, but those from low-income families and students with disabilities would be prioritized. Notably, some spots would be available to students who already are enrolled in private schools. Critics of voucher-like programs lament that in many cases, state dollars flow to people who have already chosen to pay for private education. They liken it to a coupon for middle-class and wealthy families. This article is entitled "When, Where to Watch Saturday's Solar Eclipse" by Morgan Taylor Thomas, staff writer. There's not a much better viewing spot for Saturday's eclipse than right here in Midland. A phenomenon that happens when the moon passes between the sun and Earth. The solar eclipse creates a ring of fire in the sky. It will be the last annular solar eclipse of the century. The eclipse will begin at 10:18 a.m., hit peak at 11:45 a.m., and conclude by 1:21 p.m. The Museum of the Southwest will hold an all-day event celebrating the astronomical occurrence. Inside the museum's planetarium, an impressive list of special guests will present discussions and other educational opportunities for the community. Retired NASA astronaut John Harrington, the first Native American to fly in space, will reminisce on his time in space and the importance of STEM for future generations. New Minds Enrichment, a nonprofit focused on preparing underserved students through project-based STEAM learning, along with Midland College, Texas Tech Physics and Astronomy Department, McDonald Observatory's education staff, and West Texas A&M, will bring activities as well. Furthermore, new technology called Digistar 7 will be unveiled. The technology allows the planetarium's Great House Dome to live stream with other planetariums around the world, offer never-before-seen shows, and more. Guests can also build and test paper rockets. Tickets to the 1 and 3 p.m. Harrington talks cost $5 and can be bought at museumsw.org. Eclipse viewing glasses are currently available for purchase from the planetarium shop. The Eclipse Day event will run from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. at 1705 West Missouri Avenue. Tall City Brewing Company will offer $4 pints and a limited number of Eclipse glasses. The brewery will open early specifically for the viewing party, and Bury Me in Smoke, Texas-style barbecue, will bring the food. The Ring of Fire Happy Hour special runs from 10:30 a.m. to 2 p.m., 3303 West Golf Course Road. Another viewing option will be at the annual Pink in the Park event downtown in Centennial Park. Dedicated to survivors of breast cancer in the Permian Basin, Pink in the Park is a way for community members to celebrate and come together to fundraise. Associate Director Christy Gazelle said they'll have viewing glasses available. The event runs from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m., 200 West Wall Street. This is the Life Tributes column. Evelyn Marie Hobbs, December 7, 1927 to October 8, 2023. Evelyn Hobbs passed from this life at the age of 95 on Sunday, October 8th. Mrs. Hobbs was born December 7, 1927 in Abilene. She spent her early childhood years in Anson before moving to Midland with her family. She is preceded in death by her husband of nearly 74 years, L.C. Hobbs, and survived by her three children, Elaine Casbrick and husband Gary of Pontotoc, Texas, Bill Hobbs and wife Liz of Midland, and Nancy Davis and husband Wayne of Fort Worth. Additional family members include four grandchildren, seven great-grandchildren, two sisters, Helen Hunter and Peggy Ferry with husband Bob, and numerous other relatives. Mrs. Hobbs will be in state from 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. Friday, October 13th at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. A graveside service for Mrs. Hobbs will be held on Saturday, October 14th at 11 a.m. in the Ellis Rest Haven Memorial Park, located at 4616 North Big Spring Street. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Wells Funeral Home, and online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Alan John Russell, February 10, 1941 to October 3, 2023. Alan John Russell was born on February 10, 1941 to Oscar Russell and Edna Krebs Russell in Philadelphia. He passed from this life to a heavenly one at 7 a.m. on October 3, 2023 after a year-long illness. Alan loved his wife, four boys, and 12 grandkids. They loved him too, and will miss him until we meet again. Ricky Liddell Garrett. Ricky L. Garrett, 57, passed away on Monday, October 2nd. Viewing will be Friday, October 13th from 11 a.m. to 8 p.m., with a receiving of friends from 5 to 7 p.m. at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. Funeral service is set for Saturday, October 14th at 10 a.m. at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home Chapel. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin@nts-online.net, or you can visit our website at www.llewellyngarciapipkinfh.com.
This is Christy, and I'll be reading Odessa American for October 11th, 2023. Richards recounts oil show's rich history. Ministers in 1940 protested that it would drain their congregations. By Bob Campbell. B. Campbell at OAOA.com. Dating back 83 years to 1940, the 2023 Permian Basin International Oil Show will haul a double truckload of history into the Ector County Coliseum October 17th through the 19th. We dug into our archives earlier this year, and I had fun reading about some of the early challenges and antics of the men and women who built the show, said Larry Richards, the exhibition's 36th president. While other oil-producing regions of the United States hold trade shows, none rivals the one held every other year in Odessa for the onshore oil and gas industry. Originally organized in 1939 as the Permian Basin Oil, Land, and Businessmen's Association, representatives from every county in the Permian bid for their 1940 convention, and Odessa was successful. The Odessa Chuck Wagon Gang was formed in 1940, and Odessa was touted as the hub of the vast oil empire of the Permian Basin. Richard said the organizers decided to show exhibits at the auditorium by supply companies whose headquarters are in Odessa, as well as good food and good dancing. Odessa was headquarters for about 50 supply companies, and M.L. Atkinson, production superintendent for Phillips Petroleum, made arrangements for the West Texas oil exhibit, he said. Despite having only three exhibitors confirmed a few weeks before the show, over 60 oil well machinery and supply companies were set up with decorated exhibit spaces by Showtime. Tickets sold for $1 each, and the organizers realized a few days before the show that 11,000 tickets had been sold to the official dance in the auditorium that only held 600 people. They built a 100-foot square open-air dance floor and completed it only hours before the show began. First called the Little International Oil Show, Richard said it was so successful that the organizers decided to keep it open one additional day on Sunday for working people to attend. Quoting the archives, he said, this caused a furor among local ministers who feared that their flocks would desert to the lingering festivities on the western edge of Odessa. They resolved the situation by inviting Abilene's First Baptist Church pastor to give the closing address that Sunday evening, and he encouraged many of the upset ministers to attend the event with their straying congregations. After the inaugural exhibition, the president of one of the largest U.S. tool companies said, right here where the actual buyers are running the show is a perfect setup. Superintendents and field men, the men in actual charge of oil production in all of its phases, are here. This is where the show would be permanently. Richard said earlier, expeditions feature rig builders racing to erect 87-foot derricks on the show grounds, and Governor W. Lee Pappy O'Daniel performing with his hillbilly band. The show was halted in 1942 as a headline read, Oil Will Win or Lose War, and all efforts transformed to win World War II, he said. By 1950, the Permian Basin accounted for 10% of global oil production, and the Permian Basin Oil Show was officially restarted as a biennial event at the new 60-acre Ector County Coliseum and Fair Park in North Odessa. The 1954 show saw the addition of an old cable tool rig that was a replica of a rig from the Big Lake field. The rig was used for a well drilled on site during the 1956 show by crusty tobacco chewing L.R. Pawpaw Galbraith, a 64-year-old veteran driller imported from Eunice, New Mexico. Galbraith kept the rig running during the entire show, claiming the well was owned by the Hardly Able Drilling Company. That rig burned down, and its replacement now stands as a working cable tool rig near the Old Timers Lounge at the showgrounds. The Old Timers Lounge hosts a wealth of historical memorabilia that will stir old memories from the days past. Richard said the PBIOS is a nonprofit organization run by volunteer leaders from across the industry. We're thankful for the directors, committee chairs, and executive committee members tirelessly donate their time and expertise to put on this amazing show, he said. We hope this year's show will continue the proud legacy of those before us. The past presidents are Lloyd R. French, 1950, and 52, W.D. Lane, 1954, Roy Carter, 1956, Arno Anders, 1958, J.C. Hostetler, 1960, Odie Albright, 1962, John Ed Cooper, 1964, Fred Courtney, 1966, J.A. McVean, 1968, Pat Fletcher, 1970, Vernon Blaine, 1972, Frank Levering, 1974, Bill Hall, 1976, Larry Bird, 1978, Joe Walmack, 1980, E.G. Eddie Durrett, 1982, Frank Radcliffe, 1984, T.L. Woody Gregory, 1986, Clarence Cardwell, 1988, Ed Barham, 1990, Robert K. Bob Beggs, 1992, Don Narrell, 1994, W.R. Bro Hill, 1996, John Dinger, 1998, L.D. Dave Robbins, 2000, Kirk Edwards, 2002, Ray Peterson, 2004, Joe Young, 2006, Steve L. Holyfield, 2008, Douglas E. Duff, 2010, Don Gregory, 2012, Larry Wadsdeck, 2014, Monty Sparkman, 2016, Steve Castle, 2018, and Tommy Pipes, 2021.
This is the Dear Abby column. Suspicions linger about paternity of fiancé's niece. Dear Abby, my fiancé and I have been together 9 years. During that time, we have had our ups and downs. 8 years ago, after a year of dating, we decided to move in together. The following year, we got into a big argument because his ex-girlfriend was sticking her nose into our household. She was also dating his brother. He moved out that night, but we were able to repair our relationship and decided to live separately for a while. A month and a half after he moved, I found out she was pregnant. Her due date was 9 months from when he moved out. He swears it's not his child and that it's his brother's. I have tried to let it go because I can't accuse him of lying just because of the timing of her pregnancy. We were engaged once before, and I called it off because of this. He proposed to me again 2 years ago, and our wedding date is set for next year. I don't want to call it off again, although this is still bothering me. He knows I was hurt by an ex-boyfriend who cheated on me in the past, and I think he knows that if I find out the truth, I will leave him. He treats this child like she's his own, not a niece. He picks her up and takes her out for dinner and to the park, and other stuff he doesn't do for his other nieces and nephews. Should I let it go or trust my gut? Signed, Secret or Not in New York. Dear Secret, tell your fiancé you want him to consent to giving a sample of his DNA, as well as his favored nieces, to be tested. His reaction will speak volumes. If he agrees, you will finally have the answers you are looking for. Do not go ahead with the wedding until you have that information. Dear Abby, Every time my brother or another relative calls or visits, they deliver uninterruptible lectures on subjects we disagree on. There is no real conversation or exchange of ideas. I've told them I don't discuss politics, etc., and interrupted their lecture, which I've heard many times before, to say I have to go. But they keep talking. Once I said I was hanging up, but I'm not sure my brother heard me. He was angry and offended when I did. If I introduce a new topic in the middle of the lecture, they will morph it into something to lecture on within a minute. They never have facts or data behind their what's wrong with the world views. The lectures become tense for both of us as they try to sell their points of view, and I become frustrated at the whole process. Any advice? Signed, Sister Who's Heard It All. Dear Sister, you stated that you have asked these relatives not to discuss topics that make you uncomfortable. Because they can't resist doing it anyway, screen your calls and talk to them less often. Just because someone phones does not mean you must talk to them. But if you are trapped, tell the person you can talk for only 10 minutes. When that time has elapsed, say goodbye and hang up. If someone is offended by this, remind them that they were warned. You can contact Dear Abby at www.dearabby.com or P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.